broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio in Gwinnett. This is Partners for Success, presented by Meridian Star Merchant Services.
Hello and welcome to Partners for Success, presented by Meridian Star Merchant Services. I am Dennis Bonin, and alongside me is my usual and unusual sidekick, Randy Hicks. Randy, how you doing this morning?
Doing great, Dennis. How about yourself?
Wonderful, wonderful. Looking forward to a great show today. I tell you what, and the weather's breaking, summer's looking good. Going to be a high of 90 today.
Yeah, did you see that Braves game last night? How about that?
Oh, yeah, 11 o'clock I turned it off when they were losing.
Unfortunately, even a late rally that let them come ahead from 7-2 and lose 7-6, still they're ahead 7 games in the National League East. We're excited about that.
Yes, we are. The Braves are having fun, and even the Gwinnett Braves as well. It's always great to watch the local teams do great. And I tell you what, we got the playoffs for the NBA, and I'm going with the Heat. In 7 games.
I think that's a good choice.
Yep, yep, yep. And I'll tell you another thing. Guess what today is? Today is National Hug Day.
Okay.
And you know what?
I'm not giving you a hug.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know who gave a hug out yesterday? We call it an NFL football hug.
Who is that?
Our famous Ocho Cinco. And guess what? The little pat on the butt for his lawyer cost him 30 days in jail. So y'all be careful with the hugs. Make sure it's someone that's a friend or a family that's not going to take you to the clink. All right, let's get started today with our groups. And we've got Bruce Jackson and Scott Allen with Johnny's New York Pizza, headquarters in Fayetteville, Georgia. Also, we have Christina Inslee with First National Insurance Group, located in Lawrenceville, Georgia. All right, we'll get started today with our guests, Bruce Jackson and Scott Allen with Johnny's Pizza.
Welcome to the show today, gentlemen. And why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about Johnny's New York-style pizza?
Well, Johnny's, we started in Syracuse, New York, back when I was a teenager, just a few years ago. I started working in the pizza business when I was 16 years old in high school. Moved to, got together with, I worked for a guy named Johnny. That's where the name came from. Got together with Johnny's younger brother, and in 71 we opened a place right off Syracuse University campus. I was there for 6 years with him. Decided to move to the south to get away from the snow and the weather. Scott Allen, my partner, was working for us at the time. I asked Scott, I said, you want to go to Georgia, sell pizza? And he said, yes. I said, if it doesn't work out, you know, I'll arrange for you to get back. But that was in 77, and we've been here ever since. And Atlanta's been a great town for us. We hit it at the right time and grew with it. It's been really good for us.
You know, besides the weather, and you spoke about the weather, there's that cost factor. Definitely from up north, Syracuse, New York, there's got to be a big cost factor coming into Atlanta at that age, at that time.
A cost factor?
As far as overhead, rent, square footage. It definitely, as a franchise owner starting out in Atlanta, Georgia in 77, would probably be a little bit cheaper than starting out in New York.
Some things were cheaper. Some things were you just couldn't find. I mean,
That's right.
We came from New York to Georgia in 77, and we're looking for things like Italian sausage, a good quality Italian sausage. It
couldn't
didn't exist.
That's right.
You couldn't find it. So we had to do a lot of searching and running around trying to find that kind of stuff. The cost factors in Atlanta, I don't know. The rents were a little bit more, maybe. Food costs were a little bit more. But if you go to upstate New York and buy a pizza and you come to Georgia to buy a pizza, it's going to be a little bit more money.
Wow, okay.
Just because of there is, you know, some cost factors here in the big city that you don't get in the small towns.
Besides the cost factors, what did you find were some of the benefits of doing business in the South?
Well, when we arrived, there really wasn't a lot of competition for what we did. That was really good in one aspect. The other aspect is people weren't accustomed to what we did. And we were very fortunate. We originally opened up a store in Forest Park, which wasn't a great idea for us. We were there for just a few months, and we uprooted and moved to a location over on Virginia Avenue by the Atlanta Airport. We were very fortunate. Delta had merged with another airline up north.
Northeast
Airlines, and they brought a whole bunch of people from Boston to the Atlanta area. Mm. And we were very fortunate because they pretty much supported us in the beginning. They were looking for what we had, and we got lucky.
That's great. Let me ask you this question. When you started the franchise, starting a construction company called JDP, what did that play a role in your company and growth of the franchise?
Well, let me tell you what. JDP stands for Johnny Don't Paint. When we started doing business and we wanted to sell franchises, we realized that you had to provide so much for a new location. I mean, it's like building a house. You know, you got plumbing, electrical, and all this stuff that goes into it, and people would start to get scared. And so what we did is we provided that service, and we started a construction company, and we built the first, seven, eight stores maybe, and we don't do it anymore. But it was fun. It was an adventure. We became contractors, something we'd never done before. But it got us started. It got us up and running.
You know who else did that and was very successful? And I want to say, I think back then it was in the 50s, early 60s, was Waffle House. When they built their locations here in Atlanta, they had their own construction company.
They still do today, I believe.
Yeah, and some of the stuff is now subbed out, but that's how they started, and it was successful because you want it done your way, and you want it done the right way.
So how do your franchisors build their locations now?
We have a group of people that we've developed over a period of time that are smaller contractors that are more hands-on that goes into our operation, and we're pretty close with them and develop the stores. But instead of us going in and driving the nails and running the screws in, they do that, and we kind of supervise them, oversee it.
Now that you have over 70 franchises underneath your belt, what would you consider to be the most challenges or strategies or things you might want to pass along to other business owners that are listening?
Well, one of the things is distribution of the product that we use in our stores, trying to get it out to some of our outlying stores. It's always been an issue. Some of the other challenges is advertising and marketing in some of the smaller markets that we do. In the Atlanta market, it's pretty easy because we have an advertising co-op here that we all pool our resources and we can buy advertising. Some of the smaller markets where there's only one or two stores, it's a little bit more difficult to buy that kind of advertising.
And what kind of relationship do you have with each one of the franchisees, really?
We maintain a pretty close relationship with everybody. We try to get into the locations on a regular basis. We do have an employee that's what he does. He goes from store to store to store to make sure things are being done the right way, the right products are being used in the stores. And if they have issues, he will spend some extra time with them, work with them. And that kind of makes it easier for Scott and myself so that when we go to the store, it's more of a social type thing where mm-hmm. we get to know the people, but we've got a real close relationship with just about everybody out there.
I'm sure that's important.
Yeah, it's very important. They're working for you and working with you.
Well, we're partners, right? And it's nice to have be able to maintain a relationship with them where there's that little line in the middle that says that we're the franchisor and they're the franchisee, but I mean, you should be able to work pretty close because everybody wants the same. Everybody's after the same goal.
Yep. You know? Yeah, and I lived that for about 4 years, and I understand that. That's a tough line to walk. Let me ask you, this is a four-part question. What about your product mix and quality history and menu, how did it evolve?
Well, the product, actually the base product for the pizza is a recipe that came out of Staten Island, New York. My first business partner in Syracuse, his father brought the recipe to Syracuse. And I got it from when I worked for Johnny in high school, and then I went to work, you know, we opened the store in Syracuse. And when we originally opened up in Georgia, we had the same menu we had in Syracuse, which was pizza.
And pizza.
And pizza.
So the secret was in the sauce.
Only, and there was only five toppings for that pizza you could choose from.
Right.
And that's what we did in New York. And when we got here, it was...
they wanted more than pizza. They wanted sandwiches and salads. And yeah. So we developed the menu.
The menu just evolved over time as right. we added a few things to it. And we've got a few things that we want to roll out here in the near future, but we may have to cut back. We've gotten to the point now where if we're going to bring in more, we may have to take some out. It just gets a little bit too much.
Right. You know, you say you started in New York and the recipe came from there and the secret's in the sauce, right?
Most secrets are the quality ingredients from sauce to crust. The crust is a very important part of the pizza.
Okay.
Sauce is very important, but the crust is where it's all at. It's a brick oven. Mm-hmm. It's a stone deck.
Okay.
We don't use conveyor ovens. Conveyor ovens are convenient, but deck ovens, they just cook the crust perfectly with a crisp bottom, as we're getting ready to try here in a minute.
Yeah, the studio smells awesome, by the way.
So it's different components. But I've heard this before, New York, the water. Does the water play a role in how the pizza tastes here and there? You see a big smile coming on.
Some people believe that to a certain degree. The water... it's more of the ingredients in the water, the chlorine, the minerals, and okay. those kind of things. You can make a great crust with water from just about everywhere, but you have to make adjustments to it.
Okay.
You just can't open tap water and pour it in there and say it's going to be the same.
Okay.
But
how do you manage
people like
quality
to believe that.
Based on that, based on the quality? And I've been to several different Johnny's locations, and food always tastes the same, and that's what I'm sure you strive for, to make sure that the quality is the same at each location.
We work very hard. We have a team of people that work with us that go out to the stores and train the people in the locations on how to make the crust in the stores. When we first started franchising, we thought about the idea of running a commissary, and then we decided that we thought that the training the store owners to do it right would give them the ability to tweak the recipe a little bit with guidance to be able to keep that quality of the product the same versus trying to cook it in one or make it in one particular location and bring it in buckets and say, okay, here's what you're going to serve, guys. We just didn't feel that was the approach. We felt that training the people to be able to adapt and adjust was a better way to go.
So do you have a franchise Bible?
Yes. Okay. Yes, we call right. it that right. too sometimes.
Okay. I'm familiar with that.
And we teach them, and we say this is how it's done, and if we're going to vary from it like that, we're going to be there to help you produce or create a product that's going to work in our system.
Good.
There's a fine line between an entrepreneur and a renegade, and that's always the fun thing with having a franchise is taming the renegade.
That's true.
It sounds like people are very important to your system. How would you say that your team has really helped you build your franchisees?
They maintain a constant relationship with the franchisees. They've earned the respect of all the franchisees so that they can go into one of the stores and they can talk to people and work with people. And it's not like they don't just brush them aside and say, you know, they're just the employee or whatever. Our staff does a great job. It's a very small staff. We've only got three employees. And, you know, they work hard.
Right.
They do a great job for us.
Systematically, how do you maintain all that then? Tell us a little bit about your system.
As far as...
technology-wise?
We're still pretty much old school.
Yeah, we're trying to grow on the technology side, on the technology side, the POS systems of the store, we're still in the growing phase there. We have a few stores that were our original stores from 30 years ago that are still using old-style cash register systems, and periodically they'll start change it over to a POS system, which are very good. They help with understanding your usages, your procedures a little bit better. But we're still pretty much old school when it comes to it. We're still hand-tossing pizzas. We're still cooking them on deck ovens. So that kind of goes from the front of the house to the back of the house, too.
Well, and that should never change. Pizza should be hand-style, and it should be fresh ingredients and all the things that go into, you know, a flavorful bite and robust, you know, opportunity to eat a pizza. But you talk about the technology, you know, today with a lot of pizza locations, you know, it's getting very competitive, as you know. They have online ordering, they have caller ID, all the things to help manage and make it a seamless transaction for the customer and for your franchisees.
The social side of it and the online ordering side of it, the technology from that side, we are growing into that as we go.
Right.
There are so many different concepts out there on how to do that.
Right.
And everybody's got the latest, greatest. So, you know, it's – and then we also have from within, we have 70 stores, and a lot of those people talk to other folks out there in the marketplace, and they come in with new ideas. So we try to sit down as a group, and we do this at a semi-annual advertising relationship convention with our franchisees that we discuss where we're going with the company as far as online ordering, as far as social media. But obviously, social media is a big player in today's market. And we do a lot of advertising through Facebook, and we send out tweets as a company, and we do that kind of thing. But I think for us, the biggest participation with the customer is through Facebook. People like to chat on Facebook, and they like to put pictures on there, and they like to do stuff. So that's – and we do – we do competitions and contests all the time with our customers on that, and they love it.
You know what I'm hearing from you, and I like it, is you have old school, and so you're not pressuring your franchisees to get up with so much today's technology. You're asking them and you're showing them and helping them, but not throwing it down their throat, so to speak. And that's a good thing, too, because they got to feel comfortable. They're going to work every day for you and with you, so...
Well, when you talk about things like online ordering, I personally would prefer the customer to pick up the phone and talk to the person in the store.
Right.
And I understand that companies are, you know, the big giant pizza companies, they really don't want that. They want that order to come in. I mean, that costs some money. Somebody's got to answer the phone. Somebody's got to talk to somebody. But I don't know. There's just you just kind of lose the personal aspect of the whole thing. That relationship of talking to the customer that calls every Friday night for their two pizzas.
I agree. You know? I've never ordered any food online, so I'm an old advocate of, you know, pick up the phone or I go down and place the order or I pick up an order.
When a customer walks in the door, the customer picks up the phone and says, this is Mr. Smith, and you say, hey, Mr. Smith, how you doing? These large pepperoni like you had last Friday night? And it's just like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. You know, I'd really like to have that pizza again, you know, and you lose that when the guy hits the button and goes, large pepperoni, send. And next thing you know, he walks to the store and you go, sir, can I help you? Like you don't even know the guy.
Well, and as you ask that question, you may say, you know what, Scott, can I have extra pepperoni or can I have a little bit more garlic butter?
A little extra sauce. I like my
pizza
a little saucier.
That's the TLC you're looking for, mm-hmm. You know, that you don't get from
the computer
world.
That's the difference between a $5 pizza and a $10 pizza.
That's right.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also I know that you guys have Johnny Brusco's. Could you tell us a little bit about that store and what that means?
We developed the Johnny Brusco for our stores outside the state of Georgia because we had a kind of a – when we started developing in other states, we started running into other Johnny's Pizzas out there because it was a pretty generic name when it came to that. So to set ourselves apart from the other locations out there, we decided to give Johnny a last name. And we sat around trying to think what Johnny's last name would be, and then it hit us one day. We got Bruce, and we got Scott. So we took the first three letters of his name and the first three letters of my name, and we said Brusco. That sounds like a great last name. So we gave Johnny a last name. It's Johnny Brusco's now. And in the other states we operate, it's Johnny Brusco's. But the concept is exactly the same. The recipes are the same. The restaurants are the same. The old school feel of dealing with the customers is exactly the same.
Even the logo is the same. So when you go from one to the other, you really don't notice the difference.
When we were sitting in the lobby and we were talking to a gentleman that was going to another business meeting in the building, he says, I went to out school in Auburn, Alabama, and I went to the Johnny Brusco's in Auburn, Alabama. And I was like, well, that's great. And, you know, I was wearing a Johnny shirt, not a Johnny Brusco shirt. And he recognized the fact that it was the Johnny's. And that's what it was all about, was giving Johnny the last name, creating the new entity, but keeping everything the same.
Right,
and when people go to other states and they see it, they recognize it right off the bat.
Awesome.
Terrific. Well, based on your history and that you've started it in 1995, what do you see in the next 5 years for the company?
Well, we're not a big proponent of fast-growing company because you lose control of it. We like to grow the company at a slower pace, and we'd like to see it grow. We'd like to see it grow through the Southeast and all. And, you know, of course, we'd like to see 100 stores, in the future. But we want to make sure that there are 100 good, strong stores,
mm-hmm.
that the franchisee in the location is doing strong and doing well, and the overall concept of the company that we don't outgrow ourselves.
I think we'll grow. We're starting to see some growth this year. Last few years have been tough. I mean,
right.
I'm not going to lie. The lending practices, the SBA lending at banks and such, is just really, really hard to get money. But that's starting to change a little bit. And we've got some new stores in the works right now. And I see it growing. I don't see it blowing up, but I see it growing.
Steady growth. I actually see movement out there now. I'm seeing more. We've got the list of all the restaurants, of course, coming on board, and there's a lot of growth coming up. So I'm looking forward to that. Let me ask you a question. Franchisee, is there certain requirements that they need to have to become a part of your family? Is there folks that don't make it? Is there financial obligations, approval process? Is it history and background of employment? What?
Well, they have to meet certain financial obligations. I mean, they have to be able to do the deal.
Okay.
Our franchise is, I don't want to say inexpensive, but it is compared to a lot of them out there. But you still got to be able to do the deal. We're looking for people that are, you know, have a lot of energy. It's a restaurant business. It's tough. It's not you're not going to buy one of our places and come by and collect the money. You know, you're not going to put a bunch of kids in there to operate. It's just not going to work. And when that happens, we end up taking the store back the store ends up getting sold to somebody else. We've had some turnover in the last few years, and it's because of the economy and everything else. But, you know, we know we've got a great product, but you've got to have a great operator to go with it. And the operator the operators mean so much. We've had stores change hands that have gone from going out of business to being one of of our better stores because of a new operator that's just gotten in and done it the way it's supposed to be done.
You know, I have quite some years of franchise experience in the restaurant business and grew up in it. And what stopped me from staying in it and growing is it was 24 hours. I like is you guys can lock the door and go home. So you know that there's at the end of the day, they can put their head on the pillow and start fresh next day. I've been there where I've gone around the clock and some, and it's not fun. But I think you guys got a great product, and we always enjoy going there and sitting down and have actually some meetings. So
I appreciate
awesome.
That.
Thank you.
It sounds like culture is very important also in your plans. So for our listeners and also prospective franchisees and other business owners that might want to reach out and contact you, how's the best way to do that?
Probably through the website. Our phone numbers are posted on the website, our cell numbers. So We don't hide from anybody.
And that's not just for potential franchisees. That's for customers, too. If they go into a store and it's not up to par, our cell phone number's on there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
I like it.
And we get phone calls, and I tell you what, customers love to contact somebody directly and right away. They love that, and it's not necessarily that they have an issue. It's how you handle the issue. That's been our policy since day one, and it works.
Awesome. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to sharing in some Johnny's Pizza after the show.
Well, thanks for having us. We really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Our next guest for Partners for Success is Christina Inslee with First National Insurance Group. Thanks for joining us today, Christina. Tell us a little bit about your business and what you do.
Well, that was a pretty broad question. My name is Christina Inslee. I sell insurance, home, cars, business, health, a multitude of carriers. We work with a lot of the big players in the market, everyone from Travelers, Auto Owners, Donegal, MetLife Hanover, Infinity Progressive. I know I'm missing some in there, Philadelphia, Zurich, Hartford, but work to find solutions for our clients that best fit their needs.
Well, how did you personally get into the insurance business?
For years, I actually worked in the retail industry. I was a district manager, and I covered the Southeast, and I was traveling all the time. I stayed in hotels all week long. I lived on an airplane. I had no life whatsoever, and I was actually looking through the newspaper one day going, gosh, I've never called my insurance agent on a Saturday night at 11 o'clock with a problem. And, you know, I ended up checking into it and going into insurance just to try and stay in town on a daily basis.
Huh. Interesting.
Wow. How are you different from the average insurance agency?
One of the cool things about the agency, the agency owner is endorsed by Dave Ramsey. So we are a local provider for Dave Ramsey. And part of that endorsement means that we have to have the heart of a teacher and work with you to make sure you understand the product that you're getting, understand what drives your premiums, what you can do to get your rates down, and really educate you on what you have and not just here, sign here and take some money and never call you again. We're very proud of that endorsement because we had to work very hard to get it. But also, a couple of our agents in the office are going through their certifications to get the Certified Insurance Counselor designation right now. We've got a couple of us halfway through. So we're always working on continuing education to be more than just the average licensed insurance agent out there.
Well, you mentioned Dave Ramsey and that you were endorsed by him. What does that mean to our listeners?
When you call in one, Dave Ramsey, when you come through the Dave Ramsey program, we're heavily monitored and graded on our response and the experience you had with us. One on the timeliness of our response and how we interacted with you. He always checks back in to make sure that you had a good experience, that we taught you about insurance and didn't just have you sign on the line. So it's a heavily monitored process and to make sure that we are treating our customers right.
You know, the insurance industry's been hit pretty hard with all the storms that we've had over the years, from hail damage to hurricanes to tornadoes, starting with Katrina. How, you know, the pricing has gone up. Do we see a ceiling in sight? Do we see the price coming down, or are we going to continue to see an increase?
We are definitely in what the insurance industry calls a hard market. Rates have definitely been surging. You're seeing it most in property insurance, homeowners policies, and then business building policies. Because between hurricanes and tornadoes, copper theft has been a huge thing over the last couple of years here in Georgia. And then just even vacant buildings have a tremendous amount of claims history. So that has almost doubled property rates since 2008. I'm starting to see them calm down, not go down, but the rate increases I've seen coming out for or proposed for this year are more like 5% and 6%, some 8% instead of the 20% and 30% rate increases that we were seeing consistently every year over the last few years.
One other question I want to allude to that is I've heard, and I haven't experienced it myself, but I've heard insurance companies can drop you. They can deny a claim. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Absolutely. It has been an ugly market for homeowners, and a lot of carriers are just getting out of either writing homeowners insurance or were dropping after a claim. It's not legal, but I've heard a lot of carriers in town trying to drop your homeowners policy if they didn't have anything else with you but the homeowners policy. So it has been a very tough market, but most carriers don't drop you after one claim, but two is definitely, I'm seeing a lot of trending with carriers dropping for two claims, and
wow,
three is definitely the kiss of death.
Hmm. Well, from a business owner's perspective, do you see a lot of mistakes on business owner policies?
I see a lot of mistakes, but the biggest thing I see with business owners is they don't know what affects their premium. Number one thing I see on a daily basis, business owners buy policies and they just sign on the line, and they don't understand that most business policies, like all workers' comp policies, will be audited at the end of the year. And when we set up a business policy, you're guesstimating or giving us your projection on what your payroll is going to be on workers' comp. But at the end of the year, we reconcile on an audit process. And then general liability policies, many of those are also auditable policies as well. Those may be audited more on gross sales or on payroll. It depends on the industry. But they don't know what drove their premium and how the rate came about. So at the end of the year, when they get an audit, they get a big surprise and they're not prepared to pay for it. And I run into it on a daily basis. People that have $20,000 plus audit bills. I'm dealing with somebody right now that has a $200,000 audit bill. This is enough to put a company out of business if they were not planning for it. And even the small business owner I deal with on a regular basis, you know, he's complaining he just got a $2,000 audit bill and here's 60 days to pay. Thank you very much. So if you don't know what makes your rates and plan it out accordingly, you can be caught off guard and not in business the next year.
Well, how should they plan for those types of audits?
When you buy it, you need to sit down with your insurance agent, first of all, and know what made your rates. On a pizza shop, it's going to be square footage and gross sales. On the workers' comp, it's always your payroll. But in the construction industry, it's always the payroll. Everything's about the payroll. And what you call an employee is not what the insurance company calls an employee. A lot of business owners say, I don't have employees, I have subcontractors. Well, in the insurance business, if that subcontractor is not insured, you have an employee. And that hits the bottom line at the end of the year on the audit.
Wow. Okay. What can a business owner do better to prepare for those workers' comp and general liability audits?
Well, beyond knowing what determines your rate, keeping good paperwork. When an auditor comes in to sit down with you at the end of the year to do that audit, if your desk looks like a hurricane blew through it, that auditor is going to look a whole lot closer and start digging, and you're probably not going to be able to find certificates on vendors that did work on your property or subcontractors that you hired to do some things for you. And you need to keep a folder and keep their copies of their certificates of insurance. You know, anybody that you're paying, a vendor or a subcontractor, proof that they had insurance for the entire term of your policy, not just the day that you paid them. That's the biggest thing that I've run into. And then, like I said, just absolutely have good bookkeeping, because I've had auditors complain. They show up and somebody hands them a checkbook and they have to thumb through the checkbook and figure out, you know, the audit from a checkbook. So using a good bookkeeping system.
You know, in my business, we talk about the halftime report. And when with a customer, and I've got to assume as a business owner, sitting down with your insurance agent, making sure some of these numbers line up at the end and you're not hit with a snowball, is doing that halftime report halfway through the year is okay, take a snapshot of my business and give me some feedback.
Absolutely. You really need to, whenever there's a big change, if you're trending 20% up, you need to let your insurance agent know it, you know, because they can adjust your monthly payments up to reflect your growth so that you don't get the surprise at the end. If
right.
You've just let go of half of your staff, and you're trending down, you can also call in and adjust those things and adjust your insurance premiums accordingly as well, because who wants to wait till the end of the year at the audit to get your money back?
I understand there are a lot of daily activities, too, changing the subject just a little bit. What about car rentals for employees? I listen to Clark Howard, and I hear horrific stories all the time about that.
You know, car rental is so tricky when you're, you know, if you've got sales reps out in the field for you. There's a lot of problems with having them out renting cars. One, who made the reservation? Is the reservation in the name of the business or in their name personally? So, you know, that goes, that determines whose insurance policy is first in line on that deal. Second of all, nobody ever reads the fine print when they go to rent a car from Enterprise or Alamo or National. They never actually read the many paragraphs in the tiny little, you know, six font. And if you sit there and read it, you're agreeing to replace their vehicle. And insurance policies agree to give you the value, actual cash value of the car at the time of the loss.
That's right.
We don't agree to replace it. And so you're going to have a difference there between the two insurance policies. And also, we don't agree to pay their lost profits and administrative fees and so forth. So you can end up, if you don't sign the lost damage waiver for your business, you can end up paying and having all kinds of fun fees. Plus, you know, your employee that's out there renting that car, if he did it in his personal name, he may only carry 25, 50, 25 limits, which are our state's minimum. And your business probably carries better limits, and now they're coming back at your policy.
I want to ask the same question, but I'm going to redirect it to our guests because they have drivers. Do y'all do deliveries at Johnny's Pizza?
Most of the stores do delivery. Not all, but most.
So they have drivers. If there's an accident, I can remember when I was in college, what was it, Domino's, they had a policy to be there
30 minutes or less.
30 minutes or less. And how many accidents did they cause?
That's why they stopped doing that.
Right. So
there's been so much insurance case law on pizza delivery because it is a tough class code. And the Domino's of the world have made your lives hard on that. But in general, the vehicle's insurance is first and acts as primary. And then the Domino's of the world or the Johnny's Pizza or whatever, their insurance kicks in as secondary. But when you seriously sit and look at it, the guys that take the job delivering pizza, that's usually a 19, 20-year-old guy, and he's carrying the absolute bare-bones insurance necessary. So in the end, the insurance, the business needs to have hired a non-owned insurance and good million-dollar limits to extend over that young guy that's out running around in his vehicle that, like I said, many times may or may not have insurance current on it at all. So,
and we've got guidelines that we put in place for the insurance for the umbrella coverage
to protect
supplement
you?
To protect ourselves.
Absolutely, yeah. For that exact scenario.
Minimum age requirements. We don't hire the 19-year-old guy to do the delivery. We try not to hire the 19-year-old guy. Let me rephrase that. We try to have them, you know, 21, 22, 23.
That's the corporate requirements.
A little bit more mature.
Right.
Well, along those same lines, do you and healthcare, aka Obamacare, are you getting a lot of calls from business owners regarding that?
You know, the phone is ringing off the hook, and you know, the ink isn't even dry before they make another change. And you know, I'm not even sure and I've heard a lot of, you know, questions from franchisees over how that's going to even play out in the franchisee situation. Because they're now saying the way it's worded right now doesn't matter about the tax entity formation. If you have direct control over what they do for you, you're an employer and you're going to be, you know, required. So it's going to be interesting how it all plays out in the end because it changes on a daily basis, the rules and the regulations. But I have a ton of employers, larger employers, that are trying to quickly change their business setup and taking employees to contractors and changing everything around trying to get under the magic 50 number. So, and for all of that, that may be a not because, like I said, Congress is changing it on a daily basis and what it's going to look like.
Well, I tell you, I get feedback from some of our customers, especially a couple of chains that we're working with, and they ran the numbers, and it's staggering. And for the insurance coverage for their employees, and these are companies that have more than 50.
I have a client that said it's going to $500,000 in penalties next year.
That's right.
$500,000. That's a lot of money.
So you got to be proactive.
I've got another one right now that I'm working on that's hiring guys at minimum wage. And, you know, he's got enough employees, he's going to have to offer group health. And, you know, these were people that maybe he would have potentially paid $8 or $9 an hour. But because starting January, he's got to offer group health, they're going to continue to be minimum wage employees.
It's scary where it's going to.
It is interesting.
Well, where do you see with all of this happening, Christina, where do you see your business in the next 5 years?
Well, we've definitely been growing. We actually have not had a down year since 2008. We have been extremely blessed. And like I said, with all of the larger businesses trying to scale back and change their model, we've been extremely busy. And then I was just informed 3 weeks ago by one of the health insurance carriers that the health insurance agents are going to be actually writing through the exchange now and not navigators. And so we're trying to quickly go through all the training and learn how that process is going to work. So October is going to be crazy because that's when open enrollment starts.
Well, for listeners who may have some more questions or may want to contact you and get some of your wise counsel, how best should they do that?
You can reach our agency at 770-513-2264, or you can check out our website at www.fnins.net.
So with your agency and what you do is, as a broker, you're able to go out and shop and get the best rate for your customer for whatever they're looking for with the best company that fits their profile.
Correct. I'm going to work with a multitude of carriers, but not every carrier is a magic fit for each customer. Every scenario is different, and we're going to actually look for the option that best suits that scenario and that covers all of your exposures. You know, if you sell liquor, we're going to make sure you have liquor liability. We're going to counsel you on what it means. If you're a professional, we're going to make sure you understand your professional liability exposure versus your general liability exposure.
Okay. All right. Well, Christina, thank you so much for joining us on our show today.
And Dennis, what's happening at Meridian Star this month?
Oh, Lord. Well, right now we've been working with a lot of companies with our cash advance program because we actually have our own cash advance program in-house. We're able to give a little bit more of what we call a lower effective rate. There's a lot of cash advance programs out there for merchants, and the rates are very high. With a good merchant that's been in business 2 years or more, in this market that we're having right now, we're able to give rates that are pretty competitive. Not bank rates, but very competitive rates that work for the merchants. What happens is this time of the season, they're just getting done paying for taxes, payroll taxes, insurance claims, the different things that they weren't looking forward to, like utilities, not utilities, but equipment failures, things of that nature, big bills that they're not accustomed to. So our cash advance program has been pretty good, and it's a hot topic this month.
And if people want to get more information on that, how should they contact Meridian Star?
Well, simply go to the website and see Meridian Star, www.meridianstarmerchantservices.com, or they can give us a call locally here, 1-855-MER-STAR.
Great. Thanks a lot, Dennis. And our guests today have been Bruce Jackson and Scott Allen with Johnny's Pizza, headquartered in Fayetteville, Georgia, and also Christina Inslee with First National Insurance Group, located in Lawrenceville. Remember, you can listen to our show live every Tuesday morning at 11:30 a.m. on this Business Radio X station. You can also listen to any of our shows anytime, 24/7, by logging into our website, partnersforsuccess.businessradiox.com. Partners for Success is presented by Meridian Star Merchant Services, your partner in processing, where we not only have the best rates in the industry, but we're always there when you need us. Call us at 1-855-MER-STAR.
And a special thanks goes out to our producer, our all-star producer, Mike Salmon, from behind the scenes helping us get our show ready every week. We appreciate it, your time.
For Dennis Bonin, this is Randy Hicks. We'll see you next time right here on Partners for Success.